Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
Welcome along to the Build Up podcast on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes, where we get you hyped for the upcoming sporting weekend. Mick, it was very easy to get people hyped last week. We had Ireland against Scotland, the start of the Rugby World Cup. We got off to the best start possible.
We did, yeah, pretty good. I was in here watching it actually in our office because we were working that morning, and it was like, do you know what? Everybody thinks that Ireland are going to squeeze over the line here, and look, that's the most likely thing, but I have just a feeling that we might just go out and hammer them. And I actually said it to the lads in here, I was like, and I think that's, if we do that, there'll be Ireland are going to win the World Cup conversations on. It could be the worst thing that could even happen to us, but I just have a feeling that's what's going to happen on the day. And then I thought to myself afterwards, it's like, why didn't I have a feeling about that and say it on the bloody podcast last week? But sure, that's the way it goes.
What you did say on the pod though last week, Mick, when you were chatting to our good friend, best friend of the show, Stephen Ferris, an RTE pundit, you discussed that Scotland team that have been coming for the last 10 years and have now a week later still yet to arrive. And I got a great laugh of Stephen sticking the boot into our Celtic cousins after the game on RTE on Sunday.
We see it all the time, Eddie. Every Six Nations, Scotland talk themselves up. Yeah. Every Autumn Internationals, oh, we're going to get a big win against one of the big nations. And like, where does that confidence come from?
Like, I don't know. It's like a terrible thing. It's like Ireland 15 or 20 years ago used to have the glorious defeats. Like, we have a winning culture,
they've got to step up to the plate, yeah. And they haven't. And that's one thing, you know, from an Irish perspective.
I'd say their egos are bruised.
We will, of course, be chatting to Stephen later on, wondering what the hell is the story with Scotland, but more importantly, how far can Ireland go into this tournament? What he thought of the performance on Sunday, and obviously building up to the Japan game this weekend.
He's great on RTE though. He's like the kind of the buffer in between the Heaslip and Eddie O'Sullivan war, but you know, sometimes the buffer in those scenarios is kind of just sitting there awkward in the middle. But Stephen, like, will come in and say his own things as well. And he's just like, you could tell he was just like he told us when we were talking about it last week on the show, and you'll hear it here kind of first, is he's going, he's just fed up with Scotland. Like, you know, it's just like, you know, it's almost a who do they think they are. You know, Stuart Hogg talked about winning the World Cup, but it's like, you're not going to beat Ireland, lads, you know?
He's also got the approval of my mother as well. She was on the phone earlier on in the week saying, I just saw that Stephen Ferris now over the weekend. I think that's the lad that's beyond your podcast. Just, he's a lovely looked lad, very nice lad, jolly fella. So that's the main thing. But we'll be chatting to Stephen later on in the show. We'll also be talking to Kevin Doyle. We'll be getting his treble for the weekend. He was very close last weekend.
Jeez, he wasn't far off. Yeah, I'll tell you now, if it wasn't for VAR and Tottenham and so on and so forth, but he had Sheffield United to beat Everton away from home. Not many people would go for that. And he had then obviously City to beat Watford, which they did. But
exactly.
Close enough.
We'll also be reflecting on our own 1-2 free picks. I've come the closest of anybody to winning a €5 free bet. We'll get into that later on. You'll be getting us hyped for something that I'm not aware of yet. I've been tasked with a big shout, the 25-1 or greater big shout this week. I'm fully sure I'm going to win myself 2 cakes in a sports biography. But first, before we get into all that, let's look back at how we got on last week, Mick.
Mark, it was our worst week yet. Things did not go well for us in any way. So you were all over the golf, the BMW PGA, one of the many BMW championships that are on. And, you know, look, it didn't go terribly, but you had... your most interesting bet was to have Francesco Molinari being the top Italian mixed with McIntyre being the top Scot.
Yeah, it was a weekend of moral victories for me in the golf, but not having actual wins.
So that didn't happen. There was a Scot came out of nowhere. Who was it? Robert Knox or one of them?
It was Ramsey.
Ramsey.
So Ramsey ended up sixth. So that threw that off because Molinari did finish top Italian.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, Lowry finished tied 11th on 10 under. 13 under would have gotten him into the top six. We talked about Beef Johnson, and I said I wasn't going to back him because of the fact that he'd done so poorly for us the week before that. He finished just outside the places as well. He was on 11 under.
So what you're saying is the guy I nearly picked but didn't also didn't win.
Yeah. Molinari finished tied 14th. Robert McIntyre was tied 28th. He was a bit further down.
Weisberger.
Norin was the same as well. Weisberger was 17th, tied 17th on 8 under. So like, they were all like, bar McIntyre, who we hadn't actually backed singly, that was just be the top Scot. He finished, obviously, like we said, the second Scot. The rest of them were inside the top 20. They had a decent...
Yeah.
What a weekend for Rory McIlroy, though. He's just outrageous. If you look at how he got on in that tournament, he shot a first round of 76, shot a second round of 69, made the cut by one stroke, and then on Sunday or on Saturday shot a 65. Brought him right back up into the contention to actually win it. Shot at 67, had as good a day on Sunday. I think he finished tied ninth in the end.
Yeah.
But
making a few bobs this year as Rory, yeah. Anyway, we'll look forward rather than look back for most of the show, but just very, very briefly, another thing. We had Stephen went for Scotland plus eight. That didn't work out. Obviously, Ireland played a lot better than I suppose we could even hope for. And we mentioned Kevin's treble. That didn't come off, although very close for such big odds.
So the treble was Sheffield United to win, Man City to win.
And Spurs to beat Leicester, which obviously didn't happen. Leicester won that game. The big shout was a loss, and that's all I'll say for now, because when we get to the big shout, I want to have a long chat about my big shout and how close it actually was to winning two cakes in a sports biography. And then in the NFL picks, it kind of got us going a little bit more. If you did it as a treble, you lost. If you did it as individual bets, it was 2-1. I had Dallas minus 22, which was an insane spread to beat the Dolphins by, but they did it. At the Chicago Bears on Monday night, minus 3.5 at the Washington Redskins. That came off. And unfortunately, then I was let down by my beloved New England Patriots, who were minus 22.5 against the Jets, were actually up by more than that spread, and their defense hasn't conceded a touchdown all season, and still haven't, Mark, because it was actually their special teams and their offense that did the conceding. The Jets got 14 points, two touchdowns, one off a muff punt and the other off a pick six from the backup quarterback, and didn't beat the spread by some kind of weird miracle. But that's why, I'm not going to moan about it too much though, because that is why it is dangerous to go with like minus 22.5, because these things do happen. They won the game easily. But I'm 5-1 for the year, so if you want to look at these individually against the spread, it's not bad, you know. So I have another three of them coming up later on. But not our best week, Mark. I can't put lipstick on a pig here.
Yeah, look, if you're not familiar with terminology in American football as well, and you don't know what muff punt is or a pick six, we're not even going to explain it. We're just going to leave it there. You're better off not knowing. As always, if you are having a bet on any of these, like I said, it wasn't a great week, do be sure to gamble responsibly, and you can visit dunlewy.net for more information. But now it is time to chat to Stephen Ferris about how Ireland are now guaranteed to win the World Cup. Stephen, how's it going? You're nearly the guts of a week into this now. Are you enjoying the Rugby World Cup experience, the early mornings, the TV work as well? You're a busy man.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a crazy 10 days, I suppose. Down in Dublin for obviously working with RT, and covering the opening game, and then stayed down the whole weekend. Up early for the Irish games, and then I found myself waking up at like 6 o'clock every morning to try and watch some rugby, which is absolutely brilliant. But yeah, it's just been some outstanding games, and obviously the pick of the bunch, I think, over the last number of matches was the Irish performance. I know you're probably going to touch on it, but you know, it's just superb to get off to a fantastic start, and I think everybody within Ireland now is right behind the lads, and there's just a lot of positivity flying around again. And you know, that big defeat against England, it seems a long time ago now.
Yeah, are there any question marks you've been thinking of since, and that, you know, that Irish performance, that there's nothing we've left to prove? Obviously there was some doubts about things like the line out set pieces and stuff like that going into the game, but they've all been kind of put to rest at this stage. Hopefully it just stands the test then when we come up against possibly South Africa in the quarter final.
Yeah, I think so. The only thing that I would say is, like, Ireland, you know, didn't get tested at all. Scotland didn't even fire a shot. You know, I talked about Scotland getting in the air and putting pressure in the Irish line out. You know, they literally, as soon as they went 7 points behind, just went into the shells. You know, it just seemed like they were off the ball in every facet of their game. Like, so it'd be interesting to see if Ireland, you know, come under a bit of pressure at any stage in the match, if it's really tight over the next couple of games, if Japan can put them under a bit of pressure, how they cope with it, because they weren't under any pressure really against Scotland. And, you know, I think going forward, that'll be what Joe will be talking about, is key moments in the matches where, you know, it can swing either way, that they make sure they come out on top. But, you know, superb performance, 1-23, you know, obviously a lot of guys coming onto the pitch off the bench, made an impact straight away. Big Chris Farrell was superb. You know, Jack Conan coming on in the back row was excellent. So, you know, just absolutely brilliant. And then with Rob Kearney and hopefully Henshaw and Earls to come back into the squad as well, I think, you know, it's in a good place at the minute.
Yeah, I was about to say, actually, like, we'll talk about the Japan game coming up. Obviously, the selection there is going to be a little different, probably trying to get other guys' game time in that. But in the long term now, the likes of Farrell and Conan really put their hands up to be in that. If you're going to pick your first 15, maybe, again, the 15 for possibly the quarter final, those guys, the performances they put in, is going to put some good headaches in for Joe, some good question marks about selection.
Absolutely, and somebody like Chris Farrell and a quarter final against South Africa coming on with, you know, 30 minutes to go in the match, could really, he could be the difference. You know, he really could. I just thought the way he went about his business was absolutely fantastic. Really good in the air. He actually doesn't have a bad kicking game also if he needs it. So yeah, no, I think just in general, there's a real good positive buzz about the place. And you know, selection headaches is always a good thing for a coach. And, you know, there'll be a few of the lads here starting, who started that match against Scotland, will be doing right. You know, when I get an opportunity, I really need to prove myself again, because these guys are chomping at the bit and nipping at the heels to make sure that they get selected once again in the 23.
Talk to me just before we move off the Scotland game about Scotland, because we laughed about it here last week about Scotland have been a common team for 10 years. You mentioned it on the television about where does this confidence come from? And I was thinking, you know, Jesus, everyone bigs up the England rivalry, but really, this Scottish team, like, there must be some satisfaction in just shutting them up sometimes in the talk, all the talk they have. And Mick was talking, we were saying, like, who is Ireland's biggest rivals of those home nations? Like, Mick was saying that he had heard before that it's actually Wales. As players, does that get into your mindset? We were playing against, you know, we come up against Scotland and go, like, these lads are talking a big game and we're going to have to show them, cut them down a peg or two.
Yeah, maybe. But, like, at the same time, talking about Scotland, what if they haven't beaten us in the ages? Like, they've won, like, 15 out of 18 games or something crazy like that. Of the last 18. I just think that the Scottish, I don't know where they get it from. Is it Gregor Townsend, you know, getting into their psyche, saying, right guy, you know, ultra positive, like Stuart Hogg did an interview saying they're there in Japan to win a World Cup, they're going to, you know, do everything they can to win a World Cup, and you're like, guys, you know, if you, the way they performed against Ireland, you know, there's not a hope in hell that they're going to win a World Cup. I think it'll be a tough challenge to beat Japan if they play like that against Japan, because they were absolutely brutal. I said it on the TV, you know, no variation in their game. Their key players, their big guys, didn't stand up. I think Stuart Hogg was the only one that was seen to any type of threat throughout the game. I know they suffered an injury with Watson going off, but the game was long gone by that stage. And I would love to be in the camp to see where they get this, you know, all this positive. I think it's other people talking them up too. You know, it's not just the guys in the camp. I think it's Scottish pundits and the Scottish media just trying to give them a bit of a lift, I suppose, also. But yeah, Scottish rugby, I think, it, you know, their warm-up matches against Georgia, France, was that the right preparation to go in against a full-blooded match against Ireland? I'm not really sure it was, where Ireland had a couple of big test matches against Wales leading into that game. So maybe the preparation needs to be looked at also. But I think, all in all, they had no game plan. Their big game players didn't turn up. They couldn't do anything about Ireland's line speed, no variation. All in all, a really disappointing performance, because I think everybody expected a lot more from them.
We'll talk about the Japan game in a minute, and maybe Japan will be looking at targeting Scotland now rather than us after the performance we've seen. But just on the games we've seen so far, it's going to be we've seen, like, all the big teams, but it's going to be very hard to take anything from England's win over Tonga, or, you know, even Australia and Fiji for what it was. It was a close game, but again, hard to know what Australia would be like come up against a big team. Likewise for Wales against Georgia. New Zealand and South Africa, obviously, was the one that everyone in Ireland was watching, and everyone around the world really with an interest in rugby. That was going to be the real, other than Ireland, Scotland, the only real test for a top tier, for two top tier nations. What did you make of it? Did you think that, like, some of the pre-tournament hype around South Africa was overblown, or am I probably reading too much into the result and not what we actually saw in the 80 minutes, which was a pretty even game?
Yeah, it was a pretty even game. You know, anybody that just flicked on the TV at the final whistle, we went, oh, geez, New Zealand won comfortably, you know, 10-point win. I think after 20 minutes, South Africa had an opportunity to go 6-0 ahead and they hit the post, and it was a pretty easy kick. And I think if they had went 6-0 ahead and then, you know, regathered themselves and maybe got the next 3 points or the next score, then, you know, the game might have shifted either way. But New Zealand played for 20 minutes of that match, and, you know, they just blew South Africa away in that 20 minutes when, you know, that up and in defence of South Africa, they caught them out a couple of times. And, you know, I think just in general, a very clinical side like New Zealand, when you go 15 points behind, they're a hard team to chase down. So I thought it was a pretty even game. South Africa showed their muscle, showed their strength, their physicality at times, but they also showed vulnerability in their, you know, in their defence, where they do leave numbers short. And the way Johnny Sexton played at the weekend and the variation with Conor Murray and his kicking game seemed to be a lot better. You know, you would fancy your chances of playing against South Africa rather than New Zealand in a quarter final, just the way that game kind of panned out. But I think it was a fantastic game for the viewers, and the level of the rugby, I think, was higher than any other game of the weekend. And it was just brilliant to see two world class teams go head to head. You know, it was superb.
I was laughing. Razzie Rasmus after was sarcastically praising the discipline of the New Zealand players. I suppose if there's one negative thing maybe to take from the opening round of games, and I just want to get your thoughts on the standard of refereeing, really, because it's been very, very, like, a lot. They could have had two red cards yesterday in the Samoa game. There could have been numerous yellow cards in the France-Argentina game. You obviously had the tackle in the Australia-Fiji game as well. It's leaving a lot to be desired, a lot of these matches. And actually, I thought Wayne Barnes had a decent game on Sunday, all in all.
I thought Wayne Barnes has been the pick of the bunch. I really do. I think he controlled the game really well. He communicated well with the captains. The game just seemed to have no edginess to it. There wasn't really any tackles or anything. Was that because of the tone that Wayne Barnes set? I think it was. You know, he just kind of let the lads get on with it. I look at that result there this morning. Uruguay beat Fiji. Would Fiji have been beaten by Australia if the Australian had been red carded? You know, I know it's only four days previous, but at the same time, Fiji could have a win under their belt, and, you know, today's game against Uruguay could have been a completely different story. So, like, it's small, fine margins. And I think, you know, Garcés in that New Zealand South Africa game, I thought, was extremely poor. There was a break right up the wing with 70 minutes on the clock, and Colby went the whole length of the pitch, bouncing off people. It was just a sensational run. And he gets there, and then the next ruck, Sevilla comes in and just steals the ball. And I'm like, going, there's two South African men have just cleaned the ruck out, and they're standing over the ruck, and he's just come in and picked the ball out. And I was like, since when can somebody come in and just steal the ball when a ruck is actually formed? And Garcés just says, play on. And I'm like, going, if this is a World Cup final and that happened, it would, like, and there's absolutely a couple of points in the game. It's I know it's fine margins, and Garcés has had to run 70 metres to try and keep up with Colby, maybe slightly fatigued. But I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Garcés' refereeing performance at the weekend. And, you know, I think Razzie Rasmus was right, sarcastically saying about New Zealand's discipline, because, you know, what was the penalty count? 10-4 or something like that. You know, I definitely thought South Africa were hard done by on a few occasions, especially with the offside line and the ruck. And I suppose, lads, the offside line has been talked about a hell of a lot after that Argentina-France game, which just seemed to be a free-for-all times.
Mm. Speaking of a free-for-all, I was just thinking, even you're as a back row forward yourself, like, there was a video going around of Michael Hooper. Basically, like, he was closer to the Fiji end of the ruck than he was to the Australia end, and the ref thought, oh, great, and yeah. I think ended up giving Australia a penalty for holding on or something. It's just, I don't know if there's blind spots in that, or do sometimes referees forget, like, is it just the case of them being human and just forgetting what they're seeing in front of them and what you're allowed to do and not do, you know? Because I find that obviously that's an extreme example, and that's why the video has gone around, because it was bizarre that he got away with it. But, like, for me, coming in at like a 45 degree angle into the ruck is just commonplace, and it'll be pinged 1 out of 10. It doesn't seem like it's that difficult a thing for a referee to organise.
No, I think one thing nowadays, guys, is that, you know, everybody has the videos on their iPhone and the 100 different camera angles, and, you know, the overhead shots, where like 10, 15 years ago, you had one camera at the pitch and that's all you had. You know, you had no TMOs, no Hawkeye, everything like that. So after each game, a referee's performance gets analysed by 100 different cameras. And I think nowadays, all those small things are just picked up more often. The referees have a bloody tough job. We all know that. But at the same time, the players and teams just want consistency. And, you know, if they are going to let all these 50-50 decisions go and keep it a bit of a free-for-all, and, you know, I think World Rugby wants to keep the ball in play a lot more, then, you know, it's got to be the same for everybody. And I don't think it has been. You know, I really don't think it has been. There's some of the decisions. I watched the YouTube video posted on my Twitter about New Zealand, was it Moody, who came in at like sideways and about four or five different rocks, not even through the gate, and shoulder to the head, elbow to the face after he cleaned the guy out in the rock, and just like going, the South Africans are probably sitting in the changing room afterwards going, right, what the hell's happened here? You know, they got away with murder, we didn't. And it's just consistency that the lads want. But yeah, it's an interesting one, and I think hopefully it's something that doesn't decide a World Cup in, you know, 4 or 5 weeks time, that, you know, you'll be chatting to me and saying, oh, Stevie, what about Garcia's decision, the last kick of the game? You know, we really don't want that to happen. So World Rugby's come out and said that they aren't happy with the level of refereeing. So fingers crossed over the next couple of games they hammer down on it and try and sort it out.
Yeah, the pressure's on. Let's just talk about Ireland again then before we go, because I don't know, I was watching the Samoa match yesterday, and like outside of the possible two yellow card incidents that could have been red, you kind of think that that's unfortunately the way the system is. You're going to get away with that against Russia, but you won't get away with it against Ireland. But outside of that, even all I could think of was, geez, these are big, hard men, not even from a talent point of view, but just as a, that's going to be a kind of a bruising enough match, and we do have to kind of look over our shoulder for it. You kind of think the Russia game will just take care of itself, but it kind of puts then this week into perspective, you know, as in, does Ireland divide up the, I suppose you have to kind of play everybody over the next three games. Do you think that's, do you think we won't see a full strength team, and that he's going to mix it up over the next 3 weeks, or are we going to put out, try and win this game, put it aside, and then kind of give lads breaks over the next couple of weeks?
No, I think, you know, it would be silly to, like, just rest Johnny Sexton until the quarterfinal now. You know, it would be silly to rest Rory Best and only play 80 minutes of the weekend for the next three games. I think you're just going to see a bit of a mixture for the rest of the games in the pool stage. And, you know, I think that's the best way to go about it. Guys need to get game time. You know, obviously we're hopefully going to play South Africa. I think we're just going to see a bit of a mixed bag. I think in terms of the actual games themselves, I think you're going to see different game plans. You know, against Samoa, you can't play that attritional game where you're just going to run into brick walls all day. You know, you're susceptible to injury. You know, as you said, they're huge men. They're going to put in massive hits, so they've got to change the game plan. Somebody like Japan, you can play that game. You can, you know, get across the game line because they are smaller men. But, you know, you got to vary the game plan, and I think he picked the players to suit what game plan he's going to implement in each game. So, yeah, a bit of a mixed bag over the next few weeks, and I think that's only a good thing.
So looking at this Japan game, what are you thinking in terms of, obviously, we want a decent performance, but I'm going to have to push you, come up with some prediction for it. It's a tough one because you don't know what team, obviously, like you're saying, could be a mixed bag. We don't see a niche, will they ease up, but...
What I think it'll be a mixed bag for both sides. Like, so obviously Japan side, if I was on Japan side, you'd be really targeting the Scottish team. I think they're there for the taking. And, you know, I think Japan might rest a few of their key men. And, you know, it might make Irish lives a little bit easier. But, yeah, I can't see Ireland slipping up. I can't see them being put under too much pressure. You know, I fancy Japan to get a couple of scores, but I definitely fancy Ireland to get another bonus point win. So I think the bookies have it, you know, 21 points on the spread. I think that would be around about where I would go. I'd maybe fancy Ireland to run away with it in the last 10-15 minutes. So I think Ireland, you know, minus 21, I would be leaning towards that, just because of the way that the lads in this current situation that they're in. But at the same time, Japan are playing at home. They're a proud nation. You know, they'll be fiery. They'll be well up for it. And 21 points in a test match is quite a few. So yeah. I think it'll be hovering around that 21-point mark. If anything, they would maybe lean towards Ireland.
Ireland 21-25 as a winning margin is 6-1. So if you think it's going to be close enough to the handicap, that might be one worth looking at. Even 16-20 is also 6-1. So you could almost have a kind of a look at both of them. You know,
I think you can throw two bets on there for both those. I think that would be a good margin between the two teams. I think realistically, if both teams play pretty well, you'd expect Ireland to win between 15 and 25 points if both teams play to their potential. So yeah, good odds on that.
Thanks a million for chatting to us, Stephen. Enjoy the next 7 days of games. We'll be chatting to you again.
Cheers, lads. Appreciate it. Thanks, Mel.
Stuart Barnes, having a word with Rory Best. I'm amazed to see you still here at this stage. Thanks very much, Ref. Mind your own business.
That was, Mark, my favourite bit of what was actually a tour de force of commentary from Donal Lenihan on RTE. I don't know whether it's the early mornings, it won't be early mornings for him, but for us, suits the kind of Donal humour. But I loved his performance, and that was just class.
I was too busy paying attention to falling in love with Eddie O'Sullivan all over again. We've got him in here in studio. We've actually got an article entirely dedicated to Eddie-isms, as we call them.
Yeah.
Eddie O'Sullivan's patented phrases. And he had a great one at the weekend where he was talking about Japan possibly putting out a weekend team against Ireland because they're going to be looking at Scotland now as somewhat of a wounded duck. And they'll be targeting that match.
Yeah, good old Eddie. Brilliant to have him on the television. I think some of the coverage across AIR and across RTE has been brilliant for the World Cup so far. I haven't seen too much of ITV stuff, but I know you can get that as well, and they have like Brian Driscoll and Paul O'Connell as well, so it's actually class. That there's been really, really good rugby coverage. But yeah, no, I particularly have enjoyed Donal, I have to say, since you know, he's always one of the best ones, but yeah. RT haven't had that much rugby lately, so it's been good to listen to.
The refereeing quality of the World Cup so far is an interesting one because, like, there's two kind of different aspects to it. So there's kind of some of the stuff we were talking about there, the two red cards that there should have been in the Samoa game. Hodge, I think, how has gotten, was it 3 weeks?
3 weeks, yeah. Yes, he's going to miss the rest of the pool stages.
Tackling the Fiji game. But then there's also...
I suppose from Fiji's point of view, it's like... that's dealt with in a way great for him and for their future opponents, but Fiji might have won that game.
As Steve mentioned,
they got a red card.
Exactly. You know? But then there's the other one, which is like the death by a thousand cuts of the constant offsides, the constant crooked balls into the line out, the constant coming in sideways into the ruck. Like, those things aren't obvious incidents that are going to be picked up afterwards and there'll be any sort of retribution for them. It's like... there are small things that are going to have to get better very quickly in terms of, and look at with New Zealand, it's been this way for a good few years now. It's probably not going to change before the end of the World Cup.
I watched, I don't know if I mentioned it last week actually, but I watched the New Zealand-France quarterfinal from Cardiff in 2007. And like, it is fair to say that New Zealand were absolutely robbed in that game, like horrendously, like so many decisions went against them. Apparently Graham Henry watched the game 40 times afterwards and decided at the end of it there was a conspiracy. It's all in a book that he wrote a couple of years ago that he had, so like, amazing. But honestly, since then, I don't think, other than that one red card that Sonny Bill got or whatever, I don't think New Zealand have had a decision against them. It's absolutely unbelievable. I don't know whether it's intimidation or whether they're scared to be wrong because of how hard the media and Steve Hansen and the whole New Zealand, you know, institution will go after them, that they're afraid to get it wrong, or whether it's some sort of weird accidental favoritism or something like that. But they're just not penalised the same as every other team, and it's a fact. And you've seen that on Saturday. It was bonkers. Like, they were just standing a metre offside at all times.
I was about to move on to talk to chat to Kevin Doyle, talk about football. But before we close the topic of rugby and talking about pundits and commentators, we could not leave you without playing my favourite piece of rugby analysis that I've seen in the World Cup so far. And it is the aforementioned Graham Henry.
Ted, there are 12 players in this All Blacks 23 who are making their Rugby World Cup debut, or if they come off the bench anyway, will make their Rugby World Cup debut. What would you be telling them to calm the nerves?
But I don't think you can sell them anything, really. They'll be shitting themselves, quite frankly.
That is just... It's the way he emphasises the shitting. It's not just... He goes all in. He's like, should I say shitting? I'm going to say shitting. They'll be absolutely shitting it.
The presenter's face is brilliant. He just breaks out laughing. A few things about Graham Henry. I never knew his name was Ted, even though his name was Graham. That's so much so that it's not even just a nickname. It's like what they call him on the analysis. And secondly, if I lived to be 100 and he lived to be 200, I would have never, ever thought that Graham Henry would provide the funniest moment of a World Cup.
It's going to be hard to top that. I know it's only the first week, but it's going to be very hard to top that. Before we finish up on the rugby, just wanted to remind you that Ladbrokes will have a super price boost on every Rugby World Cup game this week and indeed throughout the tournament. But now let us turn our attention to football and let's chat to Kevin Doyle. Kevin, before we get into this weekend's games, I just wanted to chat to you a bit about the Irish players. Aaron Connolly came on last weekend against Brighton. His third game on in a row, was one of the best players on the pitch. He saw Troy Parrott last night making his debut for Spurs, his first team debut in the Carabao Cup. You will have worked with, obviously you work with lots of the young players coming through in the Irish setup, and we've just mentioned two of them. There's plenty more for lads besides. This is actually a really exciting time to be an Irish football fan.
It is. I think, like, when you look at the race, all the age groups seem to be doing well. Under 21, obviously, closest to the first team, doing very well under Stephen Kenny. We haven't had, I don't want to be like writing off players, but we haven't had a people to be excited about for a number of years that I can remember, of young players coming through. You know, centre forwards, especially. Like, when I first came through, it was Shane by myself, and then Shane Long arrived, and Darren Murphy, and John Waters. Who am I leaving out there? Robbie was obviously already there, but it seemed to be that same group of centre forwards. Simon Cox came in a bit and for a few years, and Leon Best came in and out. Leon Best, yeah. But it seemed to be the same bunch. Like, I was 22 when I first started. Lonnie was probably 20, and they stayed the main strikers till, you know, in their 30s. John Ward was 35 when he retired. So, you know. It was weird how no one young guy came through in that time to sort of take over and challenge. It seems to be now, we seem to be getting a few. Troy Parrott, the obvious standout, making a massive name for himself already, without, I suppose, playing first team football, played in the League Cup last night. He's very young and you don't want to rush him too much, but then we need something to be excited about. I didn't work with him, but he was in the under 17 squad that I was involved with. We got injured, but he came out just a point for me, not to a football, but he came to watch the tournament we were in this summer. You know, he was getting treatment at Spurs the summer, and he flew over to watch the under 17 tournament, and he seemed a really nice fella. But just to fly over to watch one, to be a part of it, and sat on the bench, says a lot about him, I think, and just meeting to him and saying hello. He just seemed like a really grounded, nice fella who, you know, you could see, you know, if he's as good as he is, and then he has that personality, he should have a great chance of going a long way. So I hope he can keep it up.
Exactly.
Try keeping around the first team.
And also, speaking of some of the more senior players, last weekend you were very close with your treble. You had Sheffield United to beat Everton. They did just that, and we were looking at some of the clips. Some of the Sheffield United to be tweeting out some of the clips, and they tweeted a mashup of all John Egan's massive tackles, but then also of Enda Stevens nutmegging Seamus Coleman. It just got me thinking in terms of got me thinking in terms of, like, the Irish players at when you go into Ireland camps. Like, is there that bit of, does the club rivalry, is there a bit of crack about that? Like, will that be something they brought up when the lads meet?
No,
again?
It would be. Oh, definitely. Yeah, I'm sure Enda Stevens is ringing that up with Seamus. Seamus won't be happy. But yeah, it is. Like, when you're growing up, it's not, there's no, well, not in my time anyway, there was no fighting or bitterness or, you know, bringing up results. It was more about, you know, a bit of back or a bit of crack, and I always enjoyed joining the Irish squads, and I'm saying those lads will do doing the same thing. You know, it's something to talk about, something to have a laugh about, and wind each other up in a fun, jokey way. Good to see those lads. Sheffield United, just saying, they're good to watch. They're different, and I see a few Irish players playing there, and more Irish players in the Premier League this year probably than I've been in a few years.
Definitely, yeah. And obviously we're mentioning Coleman, like, Everton, it's funny, like, you know, a lot of talk about Silva being under pressure and all has happened since the weekend, but, like, as you even, like, you know, you picked Sheffield United to win at Goodison here on the show last week. It's been kind of coming for a while, and Marco Silva is obviously coming under more and more pressure. But the thing with Everton, like, you know, there was the story during the week that the players are kind of getting a little bit fed up with the sort of the monotonous training and maybe the overdoing of kind of like set piece after set piece after set piece and various other different things like staying in hotels and stuff like that before games. I don't know, from your perspective as a player, sometimes we look at this from the outside and say, Jesus, lads, you're a professional. You know, if you have to do something that's tedious, you have to do something that's tedious. But then you hear from players and you're like, you know what, we do it, but, you know, it doesn't inspire, and it doesn't, and you kind of need to be inspired as a footballer a little bit.
Yeah, you need to believe in it. You need to enjoy the manager, especially you're together. You know, you're together so much all the time. You travel, you eat, you sleep together for 11 months of the year. You spend weeks away together on pre-season or on buses together, flights. You're doing everything together. So little things that, like when we talk about it now, sound tedious, become a big issue when it's all the time and you're together so much. So, and when you're losing games, those things, when you're winning games, they're not a thing. But when you're losing games, you're looking for reasons and excuses. And you know, some of the stupidest things would come out as reasons. You know, and tedious stuff, doing set pieces. Oh, it shouldn't be tedious. It's your work, it's your job. But when you're not winning and, you know, people are unhappy, all that stuff sort of gets thrown in as the reason why, and everyone's looking for an excuse, I suppose, or a reason. And each one of those things might be a valid 1% reason or whatever, and you add them all up together, and all of it is just annoying players. But usually they are not the reasons. Usually it's just the manager's not good, he's not picking the right team, you don't have good players. You know, it's not one particular thing. They're the sort of, I suppose, what comes out and what you hear and the mumbles and the grumbles. Footballers are the best people ever at moaning. I was good at it myself. You just, you know, stupid stuff. And you think back, looking back now, some of the things you give out, but now that I'm retired and, you know, all those things that seemed an issue then are obviously not. You know, you hear it when you're a player, all the old players and different people saying, listen, get on with it. The best days of your life, man. You don't realise it until you sort of finish, I suppose, that all those things that seem a big issue aren't. Just get out and play a game at the weekend and try to win the bloody thing. Moan about staying in a hotel the night before a game. If you have kids, you should be delighted to be staying in the hotel the night before a game, getting fed and having a sleep. And, you know, but it's just something that... And they'll be looking back at maybe other managers they've had, well, we didn't do that under him, but, you know, football moves on. Things change all the time. If you do what you did 5 years ago, you're never going to improve, you're never going to get better, you're just going to stay where you were. So, you can't be looking back and try, you know, it's easy for me to say, but you just have to go with the manager and do what he wants to do and win. When you win, it becomes so much easier. Everything that was an issue isn't an issue. Crowd are behind you, life's great, and staying in a hotel the night before a game doesn't seem such a bad thing.
It's not that long ago since you were playing in the Premier League, but at the same time, it still feels like that things have changed so much in that, like, I don't know, like Chelsea were doing this, and it just feels like there's a kind of a players, a collective decision that we're not interested in this manager anymore. So I don't know if that's happening with Everton. It's probably too early to say, but it does seem that there's that concept now that it's okay to just say, nah, he's not the guy for us. Let's get someone else in.
It was probably then. I don't think players go like that. There'll be a couple in the dressing room, two or three, and they might be the powerful ones, and they can have an effect on a lot more. But I don't think I wasn't involved. I was involved in plenty of managers getting sacked, as in there to see happen. But there was never a case where players down tools or anything like that, or had a meeting saying, "We're not going to try." Everyone still tries, but your 100% isn't as good as your 100% when you're inspired by another manager, you know, when you really want to play for a manager, you really believe in what he's saying. It's so much easier. You just play better. When you don't believe in it, you might still be going out and trying. But if you don't believe in what he's saying, or you've heard it all before from him, even though you're trying your best, you know, you just don't have the same adrenaline or buzz. You can't force your body or your mind to have it. You're just going out there and trying to be professional, do your best. I've never gone out where the team gone, you know, we're not going to listen to manager today. We're going to do our own thing. Never been in that case. There'll be mumblings and groanings in the dressing room for different people. But, you know, once you're out and you're in your jersey and you're out on the pitch, that is, you know, you just go out and play. You never don't try because you don't like a certain manager. I don't think that's changed. I think I'd imagine that's the exact same. I can't see it being any different. I think players are still used to managers getting changed now, though. Like, maybe the pressure to do well under a manager and to feel guilty about not winning the game, it's easier to just moan and blame a manager because it's just they just get changed after, you know, you lose three games in a row, you're nearly sacked now. So maybe that pressure psychologically is different for players now.
I was going to say, does the doubt start to creep in? Will that be getting to, like, say, Everton players? You're looking at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Man United. It's so often now, even if you were at Watford, we were talking about Watford a couple of weeks ago, they were probably two games into the season, probably going, Jesus, I wonder, is the manager up for the sack here? Like that, do you see all the media speculation?
At Watford, anyway.
I think Bernard Flores could be up after the weekend.
I don't know. Like, I think you're always trying to play well anyway as a player, because even if the manager's getting sacked, the manager who's coming in is going to have a fair idea, and he'll be watching those few games. So you're thinking, well, I have to be doing my best. I want to be in the team when this new guy comes in. So, like, I just think, I don't know. But if you're at Watford, I don't know what you think, to be honest. I've never been at a club where, by saying that, Wolves, we had five managers in a year and a half. Well, we didn't realise we were going to have five managers in a year and a half. I think at Watford, you're fairly certain you're going to have changes as the season goes on. You just go out and try and play well. You try to train well during the week. Some managers are able to get more out of you than others. And some managers, you have a feeling where you want, like, talking recently with Mick McCarthy, I mightn't have liked some of the way we played or so whatever, but I wanted to play well for him, you know, and that is, you know, you feel really guilty when Mick got sacked. You feel it's your fault. The team, players, I know they all did, you know, went up and saw him afterwards when he got sacked by Wolves, and you felt guilty. Whereas I don't know, maybe if some of the teams in the Premier League now would feel like that, some of the players would feel like after manager got sacked, I probably wouldn't have that feeling. So I don't know, I can't speak for them or speak for those players, but it does feel like some clubs just seen it out and move on to the next one, hope the next manager is able to get a few wins for 6 months, and when he starts doing bad, we're just sacking to get the next one again. But Watford, it's worked for him, fairness. You can't argue with there.
It's true, yeah.
Managerial strategy, yeah. So, yeah, whatever suits.
Yeah, the Watford team, if they had a strategy of one manager for one half the season and the other for the second half, it seems, because that was fall away. We mentioned there, I was talking about Man United as well and the pressure coming on Solskjaer. I don't know if you saw the West Ham game at the weekend, but there was sort of an inevitability about that going into that game. It looked like one of those that United could lose. And, like, I don't know, there's, like, Sky kept mentioning the 900 million that they've spent, and then there was talks about how they need to, you know, bring in more players and the recruitment needs to be better. But at the same time, you look at some place, a team like Sheffield United, you look at Norwich, you look at even in the Championship, like, Leeds were a basket case until Marcelo Bielsa came in. He didn't go and buy everyone around him. He got a structure in place, the coaching system. You can see all those types of teams just mentioned are trying to, they've got an ethos or a philosophy they're trying to play to, whereas United just seem a little bit lost.
No, they do. And, like, watch them play. I don't know what way they're trying to play. Watching them under Mourinho the other night was on Sky, and he was saying, they're worse now than they were under Mourinho. But when I watched them play under him, they were putrid as well. So, like, you can't say you knew. When you watched them play under him, you didn't really know what sort of their style was. When you watch Liverpool, you get a fair idea of the way they play. When you watch Man City, they have style of play. When you watch Man United, it could be anything. I agree with you there. It's never as bad as it seems. I think a manager coming in, a Pochettino, I would love them to get him. Spend everything you got to get him. I think he could get a lot more out of those players. And then you add one or two players to the mix. I don't think he's massive, massive overhaul. I think the only worry I have, if you were Man City or Liverpool now, would you sign any of the Manchester United players? You take Pogba just because he's Pogba. You wouldn't sign him on how he's played. Harry Maguire, but there's not too many players where you go, we put them in our team, whereas that wasn't the case in years gone by with Man United. You know, every team would have gone and would have, take him, you know, he'd be better for our team, whereas just at the moment, looking at it, just because I suppose the results, but looking at it before the start of the season, you wouldn't swap too many of the Man United players for any of the other top two or three teams players. So if you were there, if you were Jurgen Klopp now, who are you going to take from Man United? So that's worrying, but I do think the right manager, like Pochettino for me, and it's the only one who you could get. You obviously you'd love Klopp or whatever, but he's obviously not going to go there. So, so out of the managers who are available in world football now and who know English football and who'd be able to go in there and make a difference straight away, to me it'd be Pochettino, and he was the case before they got Solskjaer as well. So just I just think Solskjaer's not going to be the answer to their problems. I don't think Mourinho was. He won some trophies, but he's, you know, his attitude and the way he acted in the final 18 months there was, you know, shocking to see, to be honest with you. It was just depressing to watch, depressing to watch him play, depressing to see him being interviewed, blamed everything on everyone else. You know, he signed a lot of those players. He spent a fortune, and you see him sitting down on Sky giving out about who he couldn't sign, did right? Well, what about all the ones he did sign? So, yeah, no. I'd blame him as much as I wouldn't blame Solskjaer too much, to be honest with you. He's just another one of three or four that haven't been right.
Yeah, definitely. But if United are heading towards basket case and have no style of play, the team they're playing on Monday night, I think epitomised that more than anyone. I watched the full 90 minutes of the Arsenal-Villa game at the weekend, and while everybody else was watching Chelsea and Liverpool. But like, Arsenal are just an absolute mess. Like, how they won that game is a miracle against a promoted team at home. Like, they did get, you know, they're in the top four. They're actually, the results are kind of all right. But the last two games in particular against Watford and Villa, they have no shape whatsoever, and they're just liable to do anything over the course of a game, which I suppose makes them an interesting team to play against. You know, you could easily get beaten to them as well. You can never really predict how they're going to get on.
I know. And like, going to Old Trafford now, I still think I put them as favourites, which, considering the way they played, I know they said they're in the top four, but they're again, Emery was brought in there to sort of be the opposite and exactly, just make them the solid, you know, strong, defensively strong. That was his reputation, to be organised and just bring discipline to a squad. They haven't started this season. They were sort of a bit better last year, I thought, in the second half of the season, but just haven't started this season well. But I suppose his argument is, listen, we're in the top four and I'll improve as we go along. We've, you know, spent a good bit of money in the summer, some good players. Once they get used to his system or whatever, they'll be better. But then, you know, I don't know what you think, but I'd have them going to Old Trafford thinking I'd prefer to be watching Arsenal than Man United. So,
yeah, definitely. It's a team, with no defence against a team with no strikers.
Yeah, I know. I'd go with Arsenal. I prefer to have no defence than no strikers. So I go with Arsenal for that.
Speaking of, we kind of go without your treble this week, but as we mentioned, you were very close last week. You had Man City, you had Sheffield United win away to Everton, but unfortunately Tottenham let you down. What are you looking at this week?
This week, right? I just have a little feeling for Sheffield United against Liverpool. It's just, it's an outside one. I just feel they might get something. Liverpool aren't going to win. They've won 5 out of 5, I think. Is it 6-5 out of 5 they've played? They've won. I just think they've won, actually. Just forgot they didn't have their Alisson for all the season so far. Yeah. But it doesn't seem to have affected them. I just feel Sheffield United might be able to get something in that game. Do I have to predict a win, or can I predict a draw?
You can predict the draw, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah, I go for a draw there, a score draw. I go for 2-2. Yeah, you get a couple. I don't know. It's probably a stupid prediction, but I like them. They're big. They've got confidence. Sheffield United. It's a tricky place to go. I'll just see. Can't be predicting Liverpool win every week.
So fair enough. Yeah. Ride that Sheffield United bandwagon after last week.
Yeah, I go for Man City. Give me my banker. Just get back to normality. Man City to win away at Everton. And finally, I would go Chelsea at home to Brighton. Chelsea, not fantastic, but Frank Lampard seems to be getting a little bit more settled there. He seems to be getting a little bit better. So I go Chelsea at home to Brighton Chelsea to win 2-0. I didn't get the score for Man City to win 3-1 at Everton.
Okay, just going with results to kind of make it. I will actually look up the odds of giving all the scores, but just going with the results, it's a nice 8-1. So I like the sound of that, a nice 8-1. But I will look up. Definitely, yeah. So I'll look up the scores in a couple of minutes, and we'll give the prices on getting the numbers right as well, because that could be astronomical. But sure, why not?
Why not? That's
exactly. Thanks a million, Kevin, for chatting to us.
No worries. I'll talk to you soon.
Mick, I think after that chat, I need to let people know It's too late to let Kevin know now, so he's going to think you're an arsehole. But just for the rest of the people know that you're an actual Aston Villa fan. So that's why you were watching Arsenal against Aston Villa. And because the way it sounded like in that interview, you're like, oh, well, actually, when I was watching Arsenal versus Aston Villa, when everybody else was watching Chelsea.
Oh, no. Thank you for pointing that out. No, yeah, it's because I would much rather have been watching. I actually was really watching Chelsea and Liverpool. I just had a second screen experience for the other game. Oh no, I probably did sound like an arsehole there. No, I'm just duty bound as a fan to watch that game, sorry. Can I just talk about that game? Actually, I wasn't necessarily harsh on Arsenal. I believe every word I said. They were a sham and Villa absolutely threw it away, but I don't want to talk about Villa because I'll get sucked into doing that regularly enough here and I'll have more reason to most weeks, right? But I have to say that Guendouzi was unbelievable in that game. I know you laugh every time I say his name because you think of Liam Brady saying it, but, and I probably do have it's a weird word to say in a Dublin accent, it has to be said.
We were talking about this on the football podcast on Monday, the football show. We were talking about how at some point we're going to have, I think I'm just going to do up a sting, go find the footage from last year from the Eamon's podcast of the, is it Guendouzi or Guendouzi, Liam? Well, I call him Guendouzi, Eamon. It's like, so every time I say it, every time me, Gary, or Sean in the office say Guendouzi, we always have to go, so Guendouzi.
So anyway, Guendouzi, Guendouzi was the best player on the pitch by a mile. And in the last half an hour, especially when Arsenal equalised, fell behind again, then equalised and scored the winner, he did. Think people will always think of Roy Keane. Say it's for me, it was always a sign of a world-class player is, could you ever imagine this guy just changing the game on his own, grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck? I've had enough of this. I'm going out to, you know, I'm going to do it on my own.
Yeah.
And Roy Keane did it against Holland. You know, David Beckham did it the time when England qualified against Greece that time when everything was going wrong and he just sort of did it on his own. People remember the free kick, but his performance that day in general, you know, if everyone ever questions him as an actual footballer rather than, you know, a celebrity, you know, there's obviously other examples over the years. Guendouzi did that in this game. Like, he was absolutely brilliant. And when you think of, like, where Arsenal found him, like, second division in France, and he's kind of coming through, and you still think they try and buy players around him, and it's like, oh, he's going to be that kind of extra player for them. He's going to be the guy. He's going to probably play a lot of games, but he's not going to be first choice. Every week, he seems to get better. And he's the beating heart of that team now. And unfortunately, it's a team that doesn't have enough beating hearts, to be honest. Like, they're a mess. They lose the head. A lot of fighting and arguing and bullshit. You know, it's beyond them just not having a defence. It's attitude. The same thing that's been going on in Arsenal for about 10 years now. It's just they don't seem to have good professionals. I know that sounds harsh, but it's just the impression that I get. But this guy is. They could build a team around this guy and his attitude alone. He's class.
Yeah,
and sorry, I can't believe I'm after it in 10 minutes on Guendouzi.
But look, it does promise. Arsenal do promise one thing, and is that every game they are involved in is worth watching. So,
but not worth betting on.
No, but we're going to stay away from that one. Although, actually, maybe not. We'll see when we come on to our big shout later on. But one thing can be guaranteed is that United against Arsenal on Monday night is going to be a load of crack.
Can't wait for it. I don't know, though. I kind of hate watching United.
Yeah, that game against, like I mentioned to Kevin, for me, the West Ham game, and we're going to get to 1-2-3 in a second, and I'll show I put my imaginary money where my mouth is. I thought that game was just guaranteed to be a win for West Ham. There's just something that stinks about United at the minute, and it's the complete typical type of game that they'd trip up on. And as Kevin mentioned, like, they were just nothing. Like, I don't even know what to say. Yeah. It's just like, they were just soulless.
They're a nothing team, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it was the same. By the way, when they got 3 points against Leicester the week before, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's just
as we mentioned, they were just the winning games because they get a penalty every game.
They look like a team under pressure, you know, and that's their identity. Their identity is desperation. They don't have a kind of a footballing identity, you know, and it's been like this now for a year and a half, longer even, I suppose, 2.5 years. And it's just crazy. Like, but I thought Kevin's point about Jose there was unbelievably apt and just on the money, you know, because it is, it's weird. Like, I'm not a United fan, and I look, there's a part of me that relishes this, you know, period from them having watched them win leagues my entire life, you know, and then, but at the same time, even as a non-United fan, borderline ABU, it grates on me listening to him analyse these games like as if he could do any better, when he's one of the many reasons that they're in this mess.
It's also funny that, like, we talk about Everton and Marco Silva and the pressure on him, and now Mourinho is this massive favourite to take over. And it's kind of, you can see why football managers stay on TV and stay in the limelight trying to get publicity as Bundy, because Mourinho comes in, you know, he's been, and like, to be fair, all the points he's making are kind of right, but it's a case of like, well, this is a mess that's partly you're making. Yeah. So who are you to talk? But it kind of, you know, people certainly start to forget short-term memories, you know, Man United thing is long forgotten, and now he's suddenly going to be the hero to come in and save Everton. And
there's a part of me that sees like him dropping down to a level like Everton,
and having
them
there
when it was always no, but it was like United and Chelsea when they were like winning leagues, and it was Real Madrid and Inter Milan won a Champions League and everything like that, and then it's sort of Everton, and it's no real disrespect to Everton, but they're second tier. Oh, yeah. And it's a big drop for someone like Mourinho.
It was always the question mark about Mourinho, is in where can he do it in a place that, you know, can he do it without the money? But then, to be fair, he did it with Porto without the money. It was just ever since then he's been going to these big Galacticos at clubs. Whether or not obviously that ends up happening, or whether Everton could afford him, is another thing.
Yeah.
But we did mention, I mentioned the 1-2-3 there and the West Ham United game. I have come the closest of anybody in this office so far to winning a €5 free bet. None of us have even got. None of us have gotten. That's not true. How?
I went through one where I was one goal off in two and 1-1 2 weeks ago.
I did the right results?
Yeah, I was one goal off. And I mean, one of them wasn't, like, as in, I wasn't that close to the €100 because one of them was a late goal the other way that brought me closer. Remember, it was the Celtic and Rangers game. I had one all in that game. I had 2-1 to Celtic, sorry, but it was 1-0 and became 2-0. But in the other game, I was like I was waiting for a goal to come for the fiver. I was very close that week, and I got one right. I will say though, you were very close this week because it was a late goal.
The fact that, like, it's also my actual shout. So, like, for you to predict Celtic 2-0 or 2-1 versus 2-0, it's still a Celtic win. That's, you know,
away when nobody else was tipping them that week.
Yeah, but it's Celtic.
Nobody was tipping them. You and Sean didn't tip them. Nobody else in the office tipped them.
Yeah,
everyone on TV was tipping a draw or Rangers win.
It's still Celtic though. I tipped West Ham against United. That took bravery.
Fourth place West Ham against sixth place Manchester
relegation
United.
Struggling, battling United. But anyway, in case if you haven't heard with the 1-2-3 yet, it is a free game you can play on ladbrokes.com, where they will pick out three fixtures from the upcoming weekend of football matches. You have to correctly predict the score in all three. If you get all three right, you win €100 cash. If you get two right, like I almost did, you win a €5 free bet. And if you get one, which is what I ended up doing, you win a €1 free bet.
Can I say why yours was the best week yet? You had nil all in Brighton and Newcastle, which was the obvious pick, but you almost don't go for the obvious picks in this, so I admire that you stuck with it.
Yep.
It worked out, despite Aaron Connolly's almost heroics. You had 1-0 to West Ham against United, absolutely convinced that they were winning those games. When you're convinced that the kind of underdog team are going to win the game, they generally do tend to be 1-0. Think about like Frank Stapleton deciding Ireland were going to beat Italy in 94. You know, it was always 1-0, you know. So they got a very last second goal. You'll almost be giving you that one. Well, obviously outside of the bet. And then you had, I think, 3-1.
I had 3-2.
3-2 to Liverpool. That wasn't too far off. That game could have been, you know, if Chelsea had that goal allowed in the first half. Now, I will just jump on just quickly because of all this praise for you. I only got one right this week. I got €1 free bet. It's already used in a bet that I'm going to talk about later on in the show. And I had 2-1 in the Liverpool-Chelsea game. But I also did say that it would be kind of one of those comfortable 2-1s where you always feel like Liverpool are going to win the game. Now, I think Chelsea got the kind of consolation a little bit too early for it to be in a consolation, but I think I did kind of call that game pretty well.
I also have my €1 free bet already spent, and I'm going to win. I'm going to turn that €1 into €27.82, Mick. And we'll be chatting about that and how that's going to happen later on in the big shout. But first of all, let's do our 1-2 free picks for this week. It's up first is Everton against Man City. I'm going to go with 3-0 Man City, I'm going to say here, Mick.
3-0 Man City at Goodison. This is a tough one. I don't know. Yeah. Because Everton are talented enough to make their lives awkward. and to not get the traditional Man City win. Like, I've never known a team like this in Man City. I've been picking scores in the Premier League for years to varying degrees of success and a lot of degrees of failure. But I've never known a team like this where I pick them to win 4-0 more often than I pick them to win 2-1.
Yep.
You know, it's like, it's a regular hammerings, but they don't do it every week. It depends. We talked to Kevin a good bit about Everton there, and I suppose it depends on, it's almost a test of this team's professionalism. You know, like, you almost can imagine Seamus Coleman locking them into a room this week and saying, like he did after Martinez went, and after Koeman, I think, as well, where it's like, we can't be always blaming the manager.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, this has to be about us. But I just wonder, does this team have it in them?
There's also a thing of, like, that the Marco Silva story has just kind of gathered legs, and in a time when there's, you know, it's, the media can blow things out of proportion. Like, Everton had like 70-something% possession against Sheffield United. They had 13 shots. Sheffield United had 2 shots and scored 2 goals. It's not like the Watford situation where it's kind of kamikaze stuff and, you know, anything can happen, or they can go out. Like, I don't think, there's no way Everton are going to go out and lose 8-0. Like, there's not.
No.
So, like, you're right. It could just end up being they could, like, their biggest problem is actually scoring goals and a sort of blunt attacking strategy.
Yeah.
Which would mean that they'll enjoy a decent percentage of possession against Man City. They'll kind of be in the game, but ultimately City will have too much of them. So maybe 3-0 is too big for me. But
yeah, you've gone for it now. I'm going to go for 2-1 to City. I fancy Fabian Delph to put in a notable performance in this game for Everton. So this is on Saturday evening, so I'll be looking forward to this one, especially now that we've talked about it. 2-1.
Mick's second game is the Madrid derby this week. We're going across to Spain. Atletico Madrid versus Real Madrid. What are you going for here?
I love this when the 1-2-3, when there's only one game on the Sunday, 1-2-3 goes outside of Premier League and gives us something else to think about. So it's like, I was surprised to see this and I said, oh damn it, I haven't been looking at enough Spanish football. But you know what? I don't need to, because I trust the Atleti boys against the ramshackle Zinedine Zidane Real Madrid, and I think that Atleti are going to win
2-1. I kind of tend to agree with you, but I might go with a dirty 1-0 win for Atleti Madrid. It's also one of those that is perfect for get hyped. We're going to talk about get hyped in a second. This is on 8 o'clock Saturday night.
Yeah, not bad, is it?
It's not bad at all. That's going to be a great game.
Up early for the rugby.
Neither team are going that well. Like, Atleti Madrid are in 7th at the minute.
Yeah.
Madrid are in 3rd, but they're only a point ahead of Atleti. So it's definitely, yeah, get up early for the rugby and then finish round off
all the way. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this will be on just after Man City and Everton.
And also then you got Leicester against Newcastle, the only game I think in the Premier League on Sunday. I love Leicester. I'm going for 2-0 Leicester here. And I'm also going to say that James Maddison is going to score again. And that's just a bonus tip.
Okay, fair enough. I'm also a big fan of this Leicester team. I think they will win this game. I kind of feel that Newcastle are decent, well-organised at the back in a very Steve Brucey kind of way, and also because most of their players are defenders and they tend to play,
and the best attacking threat is Fabian Schär, centre-back.
Yeah, they play a flat back five with 2 defensive midfield players. So it's quite defensive. It's hard to break through. I think Leicester will do it, but I fancy it to be maybe 1-0.
If you think you can do any better, then get on to ladbrokes.com right now and play 1-2-3 yourself. It's absolutely free to play. Like we mentioned, if you get one of the scores right, you get a euro free bet. If you get 2, you get a 5 euro free bet. And if you can manage to get all 3, then you will win yourself 100 euro cash. So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped tonight. Cause if a strike, it ain't for you. Mick, it's time to get hyped. And this week, you've been tasked with it. I didn't do a great job. I got us hyped, I think, for the BMW PGA last week, but my tips weren't great, so I'm hoping you can do a little bit better this week.
I'll give it a go, Mark. So I've been having a look at a couple of things, right? So first of all, in the kind of the secondary get hyped, but I think it's something that people should and will get hyped about, is Friday night in the proper Dublin derby, Bohemians versus Shamrock Rovers. It's the FAI Cup semi-final. We've got Sligo against Dundalk on Sunday, which is a good game in itself. Dundalk now obviously going for the double after wrapping up the league at the weekend. But Bows and Rovers, especially on Friday night, is just going to be absolutely class. It's going to be another full house, I think. They had a full house in Tala a couple of weeks ago. full house in Daly Mount, so, like, you know, there's nothing like this, but you put, like, a cup final place on, like, it's a great league game when they meet treat four times a year anyway, but yeah. You put, this being a cup semi-final Friday night under lights, this is, it's actually, there's been a really, really good end to the League of Ireland season. It's a pity Dundalk wrapped it up so early, so it's going to be all about the cup now. So that game on Friday night is going to be absolutely massive. Both teams having really good seasons, second and third in the league, I think. So that's that. But mainly the thing we're going to get hyped about this week is something that Gerry Kiernan will be very happy to hear us talk about, because it's not been talked about many other places. It's not live on RTE. The World Athletics Championships starts on Friday night in Doha, where it always is on, seemingly. It seems to me that this happens in Doha at least two out of every three times.
Everything's in Doha these days.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, definitely, like, there's going to be lots of coverage, obviously, on site throughout the week of the championships. There's a few different big events to look forward to, even just, like, straight away coming over this weekend as well, Mick.
Yeah, so that's it. Like, if just to mark your cards, there's kind of Friday night, you've got the men's 10,000 metres straight away. I love that race. It's always one of my favourite athletics races. On Saturday, then, you have the women's marathon and the men's 100 metres. We'll come back to that in a second, because I've been having a quick look on Ladbrokes about that. And then on Sunday, you have the men's long jump and the discus, both the finals. Love field events, just in the middle of races, you know, when you're watching, you know, there's nothing like watching athletics on TV. I know it's not on RT, but it is on other places you can find it. It's just a class thing that reminds me of being a kid. Also, don't forget, the Olympics is on next year. So you're going to get to know a lot of these guys by watching Doha over the next week or so. These guys and girls, because also on Sundays, the women's 10,000 metres, another one of those kind of like iconic races. Just looking at the men's 100 metres then for Saturday night. Throw that into your Saturday night lineup, by the way. Well, it'll be more kind of a little bit earlier because it's on in Doha. So that'll fit nicely, I'd imagine, in the Madrid Derby, City, Everton, all of the sport that's going on in the evening. Christian Coleman is the new big deal in this kind of post-Usain Bolt world. Christian Coleman of America, he's 6-10 to win this race, to win the gold medal. That's pretty tight, and that just shows you how much of a favourite he is. But I think he's somebody that, you know, if he goes out and wins this world title, wins the gold medal, dominates this race, he's going to be a pretty big name going into Tokyo next year. So I think that's something to watch for. Justin Gatlin is still knocking around, by the way. He's second favorite for this 15-4, and one I like for a medal anyway, if I don't know if there's each way or whatever, but Johan Blake, Jamaica, you might remember him.
Oh, he still exists.
He was the pretender there for a while, never quite did it. 11-1, just, you know, if he ever found his form again, it's probably his best days are probably past him. Also, if you want a little bet on Ladbrokes about a false start in the final, 2-13 for there to be no false start. 15-4 to be yes. That suggests to me that the days of false starts are kind of gone.
They're done.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen.
Plenty to look forward to. Obviously, a few Irish participants as well. Thomas Barr is, I see on Monday night, the final, the 400 metres hurdles on. But Thomas
the
is
heats, on. Yeah. So yeah. He's not on until, I think, Wednesday or Thursday in the final if he makes that. So. But he's long odds for the gold medal.
Ladbrokes, yeah.
But I think there's also two medal. I think that we kind of know that Thomas isn't going to win the gold. But you know, you never know if he hits form this week and everything goes right for him in his three races. You know, we saw what happened in the Olympics. You never know.
Exactly. Yes, I am hyped, Mick. And also I'm going to be even more hyped, I think, when I chat to PJ in the office, because he's our mad athletics man and he's going to have plenty of stuff up. He already has plenty of stuff up building up to the championships.
That's what I was going to say. If you wanted a little bit more of detailed hype, we should have got PJ in. But as I said, he knows exactly what's going on. But he's been like a giddy schoolgirl for the last couple of weeks building up to this while we're all kind of looking at All-Ireland finals and everything else. This is his bag. So, there'll be lots of good stuff on site over the next kind of week and a half. But again, like, one of the biggest sporting events of the year traditionally, and it's been kind of glossed over and overlooked because of just a changing sporting landscape, right? But that doesn't mean that it isn't exactly what it always was. And it's just watching a night of athletics on TV for me is just one of the great sporting experiences, and anyone that hasn't done it in a long time, get back on the horse this week.
Absolutely. Let's get into our big shout.
All right, hold it. Steady. Just hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't! Get round. No, don't. Matty!
Big shout time, Mick. Last week, this is our weekly quest to win two cakes in a sports biography by correctly predicting a 25-1 or greater shout for the sporting weekend. Last week, you said that Sergio Aguero was going to score any time against Watford, and Watford were going to lose 6-0. I laughed you out of the office.
Yeah.
I said, there's no way that City are going to, or Watford are going to let City beat them 6-0 again. And I was completely proved right. And that's all there is to really say about that game.
Can we agree this was the closest big shout yet?
Yeah.
And can we agree that if it wasn't going to happen, the last thing we expected to happen was that City would score too many goals?
I messaged you at, I don't know whatever time it was, but it was they were 3-0 up.
Yeah.
And you looked at it about 2 minutes later and you were laughing going, geez, they're nearly there. But by that stage, it was 5-0.
Yeah. And it was 18 minutes played in the match. At that stage, I'm thinking, we've no chance here. There's not Aguero, by the way, had already scored as you'd expected. And, you know, that pushed the odds up from to 37-1 with that double. Like, so we were looking good, right? I was already thinking, can I get these two cakes in a sports biography? You know, I really, really was. My only hope at that stage was the game lets up a little bit. Not much more is going to happen. You know, they're not going to be pushing for that goal, but you'll get one more over the course of 70 minutes. It did seem a little bit too early, but they got to half time at only 5. And at that stage, I'm thinking, now there's a really good chance. There's a really good chance they go out and win the second half 1-0. And of course, they scored nearly straight away. And I'm like, no way, no way. And then as it turned out, they won 8.
And it could have been 11 or 12. Aguero missed so many chances.
I know. But like, I can't believe it. I can't believe they went out and had one of their full-on City hammerings on the week that I picked them to do it. But there you go. Close but no cigar. There's a reason these things are 25-1, Mark.
Exactly. We had a couple in emails as well. A few people emailed the gaffer at Ballstudy hoping to win two cakes in a sports biography. They didn't get within an ass's roar.
No, nobody got. Do you know what? There was one of them in particular that I was on that I think every bet lost, and I think there was 5 of them. But I loved it. It was across all different sports. It was all kinds of different bets, and it was like this person has worked really hard to try and get these up to 25-1. Now I'm pretty. As I said, none of them seemed stupid. It looked like a good one, but not one of them came off. I love that.
But look at. As I emailed back to one of them, as Stephen Gerrard would say, we go again. This week is a new week full of opportunities to win yourself two cakes and a sports biography.
What have you got then? Your turn.
I'm up this week, and this is one of those you could almost describe. I can picture just you taking, cutting what you just did there, the audio of you describing that bet that the person we emailed us in had, and describing it, playing it to this one. Come this time next week, right?
Right, okay.
It's a 6-fold accumulator that comes to 27-1.
Okay.
Or over 27-1, actually, right? So we start off with Everton against Man City. Man City to win.
You love the accumulators for these, don't you?
Yeah.
I go for mad things that are unlikely to happen.
You go for a one-off thing that's like a draw between Ireland and Wales and rugby. Hibernian against Celtic.
So Man City just to win.
Yep, Man City just to win. That was the one that just pushed me.
That doesn't belong in a big shout.
Hold on now.
Go on, Hibs and Celtic.
I just needed it. It was like 23-1 and I needed something to push
Hibs
me
and
over
Celtic,
the threshold. Hibs against Celtic. Hibs second bottom of the table. Heckenbottom is having a mare. Who would have predicted that? Celtic to beat Hibs, straight up.
This is against the spirit.
It's not against the spirit because there's more to come. LA Chargers against the Miami Dolphins. Chargers to beat the spread, -16.
Okay.
That's so dodgy enough now. We're getting into more dodgy territory.
This is tough because it's in Miami and I didn't go for it in my three picks that are coming up in a minute. But I did say last week that this could be the worst American football team of all time, professional American football team of all time. And you might be safe just going with them against the spread all year. Now, they were feisty in the first half against Dallas last week, but they did eventually lose a 22-point spread, which is, I think, the first time since 1975 or something like that that's happened. There's some mad stat. I don't know when it was. So, -16 this week. I think it's likely, but far from a given.
Exactly. They're getting shadier and shadier every one I go through. Man United against Arsenal. You said earlier on that you'd be mad to bet on Arsenal at a game. I'm predicting that Arsenal will beat Manchester United at Old Trafford.
Oh, wow. Okay.
See?
Jesus. Maybe we're getting
juicy.
I don't know about this now, yeah.
So that's our fourth pick. Two more to go. Leicester against Newcastle. As I said in 1-2-3, I think Leicester are going to win that 2-0, but I've just gone for a Leicester win in this. So we're building up to a big shout, Mick.
Okay, go
and
on.
And finally, Wolves against Watford. Both teams to score. Watford can't defend. Wolves are a little bit all over the place at the minute. This could end up being another 1-1 draw or 2-1 to somebody, but I think both teams are going to score on that. So that, as I mentioned, comes to 27-1.
Right, okay. It's a big shout, Mark.
There's a lot there to keep you interested throughout the
game.
There is,
that's the thing. It'll be hard to remember them all, to be honest. But at least we've got that there. You'll keep you occupied for the weekend, I suppose, anyway, if nothing else.
Exactly. And as I mentioned, I'm using my €1 free bet from the 1-2-3 last week. This, so it's a shot to nothing. And I'm going to win those two cakes in sports biography, more important than that €27. Mick, before we go, your NFL picks. You're now 5-1 in the 6 picks you've had so far in the opening 2 weeks. Can you make this, like, I suppose 8-1 is the dream here, but even if you got two of them, I'm going to give you credit again.
Yeah, it's not bad though, 5-1. Like, I mean, you take that as a, like, you know, there's bloody leagues for these things and picking 3-5 games a week against the spread in America, where that would be a very, very good record. There's a reason these things are hard to do with spreads, but I've been very, very, I don't know, I think I've made good picks so far. You know, I'm not usually going to pat myself on the back for these things, because there's a lot of luck involved. But I think I actually got unlucky more than lucky with the one loss with the Patriots and the Jets. However, this week I'm finding it very hard to read, so I'm not.
Should put on some glasses. Go on.
I'm finding it very hard to read this week, but I will give you 3 picks anyway. All of these are about kind of like 10 to 11 or so. So if you want to do them individually, if you're having a bet, or a treble, it works out as 5.8-1, which is about normal for these kind of against the spread trebles. We talked a little bit about home underdogs and how they generally have a record, a better record against the spread. So I've looked at that a little bit this week, and there's two that stand out to me that I like, but then there's one that I don't like. So I'm going the opposite way. So I'm, first of all, the Detroit Lions hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City Chiefs, the most exciting offense in football. They had a really good win against Baltimore at the weekend. Baltimore, very good team. They only won by 5. But they're going into Detroit, who are somehow undefeated. 2-1-0. They drew the first game with Arizona. But not very good, I don't think. At least not in that top echelon. So I fancy the Chiefs to go in there with Patty Mahomes throwing touchdowns and beat them by more than 6 points. So it's Kansas City minus 6. Now, the other two games, home underdogs. The Arizona Cardinals, with their feisty overall number one pick, Kyler Murray, the small, exciting quarterback. They're going to host the Seattle Seahawks, their division rivals, who lost to New Orleans at the weekend. And, you know, I think that Seattle will probably win this game just about, probably a late field goal. But Arizona are plus 5 at home. They're staying in every game. They keep kind of losing them, but yeah, they drew the first game in a comeback. But the other two is like they've hung on and lost them. I fancy them to do the same. I like them at home this week, plus 5. I'm going to go for that. And then lastly, the New Orleans Saints at hosting the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas Cowboys are 3-0. New Orleans Saints are without Drew Brees, but they've got Teddy Bridgewater in there. They had a big win in Seattle at the weekend. They're now back at home. They kind of need to win this game. They need to kind of keep the wins ticking over. They're plus 2 at home. They should have been in the Super Bowl last year, but for probably the worst refereeing call in the history of the NFL. They're a very, very good team. It's beyond just Drew Brees, you know, and I don't like the fact that they're underdogs at home, and therefore I kind of have to pick them.
Very good. How are my beloved Buffalo Bills getting on? Buffalo. I tried looking for highlights at the weekend, and all I found was one fan of the Buffalo Bills powerbombing another fan through a table at a tailgate, and two other fans blowing up fireworks in the middle of a housing estate.
Well, there you go.
To see anything on
there you
the
go.
Bridge.
That's all you need to know. The Buffalo Bills are 3-0. They won again at the weekend. They're absolutely flying. They're hosting the New England Patriots this weekend.
Easy win. Chalk that down, lad.
7.5-point underdogs. But I'll tell you what, the Buffalo Derby. Bills, it's, well, yeah, not quite. Yeah, localish, I suppose, but it's division rivals and their big enemy who always killed them. The crowd, you kind of alluded to them there. They're the maddest fans in the NFL. Of course, the fans who threw a dildo at Rob Gronkowski's head a couple of years ago after he scored a touchdown for the Patriots. I'd expect some fan craziness
skullduggery.
And skullduggery. And a few highlights from the fans over the course of the day. However, I don't know what's going to happen in the game. I was thinking about the Patriots minus 7.5.
It's not on my watch.
I have to be honest, though, given how the Patriots are playing and how their defense is playing, I'm actually showing the Bills a lot of respect by not going for them. And that's like, it's a long time since I've showed the Bills any respect, Mark.
I'm really hyped now for Buffalo Bills against New England Patriots. There's so much. This is the best sporting weekend of the year so far, mate. There's so much going on.
Yeah, every week gets better.
And
you know,
it doesn't finish until Tuesday because you've got Man United against Arsenal, and then we're back again with Ireland against Japan on Thursday. There's so much going on.
Ireland's anyway, Russia on Thursday.
Ireland Russia, yeah, I should say. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Speaking of Ireland and Japan, enjoy the game, everybody. Enjoy the entire sporting weekend. Enjoy the World Athletics Championship. Enjoy the Russian Grand Prix if you're watching it. Enjoy everything else we've talked about on this week's podcast. Be sure to subscribe. You can find us on balls.ie podcast on all good podcast apps. Thanks very much to Kevin. Thanks to Stephen. Thanks to Mick. Thanks very much to Ladbrokes. And if you are having a bet this weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly, and you can visit dunlewy.net for more information. But now to play us out this week, we've got a very special treat for you. Mick Constantine was in our office last week. The Lord Superior, the supreme ruler of all Irish sporting songs. He's written a special song for the Rugby World Cup in association with Ladbrokes. He was in last week to perform it live in our office. So here it is now. Have a listen.
And the Leinster lads have packed their bags from Brown Thomas. There's an air of excitement from every fan as Joe Schmidt's men head for Japan. Well, the English and the French, the Welsh and the Scots, Australian, South Africans, we bet the lot. And even New Zealand, those men in black, came to Dublin, now we sent them right back. Well, this is it, this could be the year. We're off to Japan with nothing to fear. Shoulder to shoulder, try after try, belting out the fields of Athenry. And hit after hit, we won't hold back. We'll introduce the Japanese to the crack. Now the Irish voice is in full flow, from Osaka up to Tokyo. We've had men like O'Connell, O'Driscoll and O'Gara, legends that have brought Irish rugby this far. And the great Axel Foley looking down with delight as the men in green stand up and fight for every scrum, every tackle, every ruck, every maul. Put their head where it hurts and die for a ball. And the crowd will come alive time after time as the Irish pack dies over the line. Well, this is it, this could be the year. We're off to Japan with nothing to fear. Shoulder to shoulder, try after try, belting out the fields of Athenry. And hit after hit, we won't hold back. We'll introduce the Japanese to the crack. Well, the Irish voice is in full flow, from Osaka up to Tokyo. We've Stander and Furlong, O'Mahony and Ryan, Bundiaki and Ringrose, Keith Earls in his prime. And no, we won't be going home in any hurry with Johnny on form next to Conor Murray. Well, now the stage is set, get on to Ladbrokes, have a bet, and this'll be your World Cup you'll never forget. But just imagine if we won it, if it was to be, could turn it to the greatest session in history. Well, this is it, this could be the year. We're off to Japan with nothing to fear. Shoulder to shoulder, try after try, belting out the fields of Athenry. And hit after hit, we won't hold back. We'll introduce the Japanese to the crack. There'll be Irish voices in full flow, from Osaka up to Tokyo. Well, this is it, this could be the year. We're off to Japan with nothing to fear. Shoulder to shoulder, try after try, belting out the fields of Athenry. And hit after hit, we won't hold back. We'll introduce the Japanese to the crack. There'll be Irish voices in full flow, from Osaka up to Tokyo.